while restrictions ease a little bit more today in the north as well. We'll talk about that in a few moments, but things were much quieter generally in Belfast on Saturday and Sunday nights after a week which saw rioting, extensive damage and injury to around 90 PSNI officers. The rioting involving some people as young as 12 saw youths throwing bricks, fireworks and petrol bombs at the police. The violence largely concentrated in areas where criminal gangs linked to loyalist paramilitaries have significant influence. We can talk to our Northern editor now, Vincent Kearney. Vincent, a quieter weekend, why?
A number of factors, Audrey, and it hadn't looked this way. Certainly last Thursday there was an expectation and a fear that this violence could possibly escalate. There were quite a few loyalist protests planned across Northern Ireland. Some of those protests were potentially going to be at interface areas where Catholic and Protestant communities live side by side, and when that happens, that escalates the potential for conflict. So a number of things happened, principally on the loyalist side. The death of Prince Philip undoubtedly was a big part of this dynamic, because if you think about the reasoning, the rationale we were told for that violence, was that their British culture and identity was under attack. Well, a big part of that British culture and identity is a loyalty to the royal family, and that's how they define part of their Britishness. So while there were a lot of young people involved, and loyalist paramilitary organisations say they were not involved at an organisational level, it's as clear as the nose in your face, Audrey, that members of those paramilitary organisations, individual members, were heavily involved in manipulating and encouraging those young people to become involved in violence. So clearly what happened was that those organisations got the word out that look, lads, you can't take the streets and protest, you can't continue this violence, as a mark of respect to Prince Philip. And that happened after his death on Friday. Apart from two sort of outlying areas, there was a loyalist estate in Korean in County Antrim, and then in the Tigers Bay area of North Belfast, where small groups did engage in violence. And in North Belfast, that then provoked a response from nationalist views in the New Lodge area. But then the message clearly got out, and loyalists stop coming onto the streets. And there was also a very big commitment and effort, Audrey, from community workers on both sides after successive nights of violence, when clearly the appeals from politicians weren't working. Sports organisations and community groups put members out onto the ground. It was very noticeable in West Belfast and Springfield Road, the Nashes side of that interface there. There were dozens of community workers on the street on Friday evening, from local GA club, from sports clubs, from community groups. And at one point, when small groups had started to gather, they were actually heavily outnumbered by members of community organisations who talked sense into them and told them to get off the streets, and they did so. So that combination of factors has led to this fairly rapid de-escalation at this point.
Well, that's good. And I suppose the thinking now is, will this be turned on again, or can what happened over the weekend be built upon to ensure that this is the end of it?
The hope certainly going forward, Audrey, is that once you break the cycle of violence, it's harder to pick that up again. It'll depend what happens politically as well. Naomi Long, the Justice Minister, last week had urged politicians, unionist politicians in particular, to dial down their rhetoric. Well, this now gives politicians a period of time to do just that, to dial down that rhetoric. They'll hope that the word will filter through to young people on both sides that this isn't the way forward. They can resolve things politically. Those talks going on between the UK and the EU over the protocol will help unionist politicians, because whatever level of progress is being made in terms of the optics, it looks like something might be getting done about the protocol. And it's also taken the sting out of that fairly corrosive debate around the future of the chief counsel of the PSNI, Simon Byrne, because unionists were saying that they had no faith in the police. But it's very difficult for unionist politicians to criticise the chief counsel when his officers are coming under attack. As you say, Audrey, almost 90 police officers injured. So it's taken the sting out of that debate as well. The danger in Northern Ireland, Audrey, is it just takes one little thing for this all to go again. Perhaps next weekend, after the official mourning period ends, loyalists could decide at the start of next week, well, they've done their bit, they've held back, and they now want to pick up where they left off. And the other danger is that over the weekend, at some point, Republicans in an interface area could provoke a loyalist response by doing something insensitive around the funeral of Prince Philip. So police and politicians will be quite nervous that, yes, it has settled, it looks hopeful at this stage, but it doesn't take much for things to kick off again.
Vincent, stay on the line. I'll come back to you to talk about the restrictions in just a moment. But you mentioned the protocol there and those talks. Our Europe editor, Tony Connolly, is on the line now. Because, Tony, we know that some unionist leaders have linked the violence to loyalist tensions over the Irish Sea border imposed as a result of Brexit and the deal between the EU and the British government. You're reporting this morning that talks between Brussels and London have started, which could resolve some of the disagreement over the protocol. Tell us more.
Yes, Audrey. Well, there have been talks at technical level for some time, and on the 31st of March, the UK provided a document to the European Commission, some call it a roadmap, which would show how they're going to implement the protocol. There are a number of outstanding areas, border control posts, permanent border control posts at ports. They're the checkpoints for live animals and animal-derived food products. There are other outstanding issues around the EU having access to databases, checks and paperwork involving goods going from Northern Ireland to Great Britain. I mean, these are areas which still have to be fully implemented under the protocol, which, of course, is a binding international agreement. Now, in return for the UK spelling out how it's going to implement these things, the European Commission is signalling that there will be greater leniency on the more sensitive issues around how the protocol is applied. And what I'm hearing is that the technical work, at least, is bearing fruit. There is a positive atmosphere around those talks, but it still needs a political push. And that's why we're expecting, perhaps this week, if not early next week, a meeting, perhaps a phone call between David Frost, the UK's chief minister on Brexit and the Northern Ireland Protocol, and Maros Šefčovič, who's his opposite number on the European Commission. So there is work underfoot, underway, and there are, positive signals that technical work is starting to bear fruit.
Okay, thank you very much, Tony. And just finally, back to you, Vincent. The restrictions easing on this side of the border today, they had already begun to ease north of the border a couple of weeks ago, and that process is speeding up today then. What can people do from today?
A range of things that have changed today, not the big ticket items, non-essential retail remains closed, but they can operate click and collect services. Outdoor retail is allowed to open, like garden centres and car washes. People can gather in larger numbers, up to 10 people from two households can gather now outdoors in a private garden. Up to 15 people can take part in sport. So signs that it's moving in the right direction. Now, the executive will meet on Thursday. At that stage, they're expected to agree and indicative time scales for what happens next for a full reopening of non-essential retail and of the hospitality sector. But we may not get that detail on Thursday, Audrey, because of the mourning period. There are protocols in place, which means that no ministers are supposed to make announcements. So what might happen on Thursday is that the executive behind closed doors could agree this indicative timescale, but we're unlikely then to get the weekly press conference held by Arlene Foster and Michelle O'Neill because of those protocols. So they might issue them simply in the form of a press release, or they might agree them but not actually unveil them publicly until early next week because of these protocols in place.
Okay, Vincent, thank you very much indeed. Vincent Kearney, our Northern editor, Tony Connolly, our Europe editor, thank you both very much for joining us.